Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier. And in case you can't tell, I got a friend with me today. Yes, that is right. Lord Stanley's Cup is right next to me. We have a very fun show. We got Katie Baker joining us. She's going to talk some NHL. We're also going to have Chuck Mendenhall join us to talk some UFC. And I'm looking at the odds right here for the NHL. My Carolina Hurricanes, plus 700, the favorites to win the Stanley Cup. So very excited about that. Katie, I'm sure we'll talk about the Rangers, plus 900. So again, we got a lot to talk about. We got the Stanley Cup in the building. But before we get into Chuck and Katie and the fun show that we have, we're going to toss right now to Kevin O'Connor and Waz. They got a little ride along and they're going to talk some NBA. We'll go to that right now.
Got to pick up Waz.
KOC, what's good, baby? All right.
What's going on, Waz?
You ready?
Ready to go for a ride?
Yes, sir.
Let's do it.
All right, let's hop on in. All right.
Let's talk a little basketball.
Right.
Buckle up, forward, play.
Oh yeah, of course. We gotta be safe. Safety first. Okay, there we go. Self-driving, baby. Let's go.
Nice and patient, right?
Let's go.
It does a good job. So in the text I asked you, Zach Edey, you think he has a chance? Did you watch any of the tournament?
I watched the championship game. I think he has a chance to be an NBA player.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If Bismack Biyombo
can
be an NBA player for a decade, I think Zach Edey can find a place for himself in the league.
He's 7'4", 300 pounds.
Yep.
He's played basketball for only 6-7 years of his life.
Yep.
I think he's got enough skill, enough size, enough of a work ethic that he's going to carve out a role in the league. It's just a matter of how good is he going to be.
Right. And I was talking about this with the homies. I don't see why he can't be a bottom 10 level, you know, starter, right? Maybe he's the 22nd or 23rd best starting center in the NBA. But this idea that he can't play, I don't buy that.
Sure.
One, because he's got some skills to him offensively. He's not just a nothing big stiff who has no skills. He has good hands, good feet. He's got, like, great footwork, all of that stuff. Obviously a switch out guy, five out, be able to play in space. He might not be able to do that. But in terms of when guys get to the rim and he's there, he's going to be a deterrent.
I agree.
Which is an NBA skill that many teams value. And so I think he's an NBA guy legitimately.
It'll be very interesting to see like kind of where Edey goes. Is there a best fit for him? Is there a team that you want to see him go to?
Best fit. I think for me, you probably want to be a Western Conference team. I think teams are finding that for Jokic, you need somebody with some beef, some heft, some length.
Play him one-on-one.
Play him one-on-one.
So what about OKC?
This one from SGA.
Absolutely.
OKC, this year, they're going to be in the playoffs. They're a top seed.
Man, that would be a hell of a combination, and God knows OKC has the freaking draft capital to get that done. So that would be pretty interesting, honestly.
Well, I mean, OKC could even probably try to trade up and get Klingon, for that matter, with all their draft capital. Did you see Bronny James declare for the draft?
I did. I know that people are saying that this is a historically weak NBA draft, but a guard who is 6'2 and under, averaging 4 points a game or whatever it is, that's never been anybody's version of an NBA prospect. I'm not saying that one day he cannot make himself into a credible NBA player, but Bronny James has shown zero indication. I'm not saying this kid doesn't have the work ethic. I think he's fairly athletic. He's shown he's got a great nose for the ball, that he has a fairly high basketball IQ, but what he's put on the floor as far as tape is concerned has not been that of an NBA prospect this year.
With him, I mean, unfortunately, the shooting is underdeveloped at this stage of his life, like it was with LeBron when he came straight out of high school, and hopefully he can improve. I think with Bronny, he's also only 6'2".
He's not some Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James level athlete. And, I mean, for me, more importantly, he hasn't shown the ball handling, playmaking, you know, the skill work that it takes for somebody of his size to succeed at the next level. So, again, this is not to tear this kid down. It's just as an NBA prospect.
It's not tearing him down. It's just contextual.
Yes. No,
where he is today, and he could become an NBA player.
Yes.
I wonder with LeBron if he actually would leave LA unless they actually do make some changes here, which it could include moving on from Darvin Ham. I know it's been better lately, finally going to Bowie in the starting lineup and going back to what worked last season, but it just still feels like the guys in that locker room are out on him, like he did lose the trust. And then also, there's so many different variables here. How do you kind of see it playing out from today moving forward with the Lakers in the play-in to the offseason?
The chatter out of Lakerland when you talk to people who are closer to the situation than I personally am, I think teams are going to be more aggressive in the offseason, thereby making the Lakers' competition for these guys even stronger. Mm-hmm. So you wonder if LeBron is going to be like, look, man, there's nothing I could do here. Maybe I do go play with a Joel Embiid.
For sure.
Maybe I do end up in Indy. You know, who knows what this guy does in terms of cap space teams and things of that nature.
And, of course, the Paul George rumors for Philadelphia as well are worth noting. Like, they have been potentially a team that's in on him.
And the thing is, Philadelphia has been the godsend for every single upcoming free agent of any level of prominence because, one, they're in a good market. Two, they have obviously have a superstar there. And three, they have the cap space.
Yeah, the only really team that has cap space and they're a contender. Like,
exactly. And so if you are Paul George's agent, there's an obvious fit in Philadelphia if, for whatever reason, you know, Steve Ballmer and his brain trust decide they don't want to do that.
We don't want to pay Paul George.
Yeah. So let's just say they decide to do that. Paul George and them could be like, yo, look, there's money there waiting for me.
Yep.
LeBron James, same thing. Like, he's an obvious fit. Tobias Harris comes right off of those books. He slots perfectly into the power forward position.
Imagine the two-man game between LeBron and Maxi.
It's just crazy. Him and Maxi can run two-man. Him and Joel can run two-man.
And by the way, Embiid, like an AD, you think about AD lost the three-point shot. Well, Embiid's got it.
Dude,
I mean, he can space for LeBron.
He can space so that pick and pop becomes open in such a way. LeBron himself becomes a cutting threat.
Yep.
LeBron has become much better spot up shooter. The fit is
shoot
just
over 40% this year.
Yeah, it's insane. LeBron would be a major contributor to winning on a team like that. And so, yeah, that's pretty exciting stuff.
Buddy Hield goes to the hoop that time. Rudy takes it to the glass.
And with the awards, so the NBA is sending out their ballots after the season ends. And one of the things that I'm kind of still undecided on is Defensive Player of the Year. Rudy Gobert, the heavy favorite still on the FanDuel Sportsbook.
Yeah.
But then Victor Wembanyama, to me, I think he's a deserving candidate, even though he's a rookie, even though the Spurs have lost. If you compare to the way the Spurs have performed with Victor on the floor to how the Wolves have played with Rudy Gobert, how the Lakers have played with AD and the Heat with Bam, the Spurs are still right up there with one of the best defenses in basketball when Victor is on the floor. Do you think that there's any logic?
Dominant is a strong word.
With Victor around the rim. Uh-huh. It's more of a knock on everybody else on this team, the fact that they have not been.
Sure.
But with Victor, individually, he is truly special. Do you think there's any logic to choosing Victor for Defensive Player
Absolutely
of the Year?
Absolutely not.
Is Rudy your Defensive Player
Rudy's
of the Year?
Rudy's my Defensive Player of the Year. I got Rudy Gobert as my third team All-NBA.
Okay, I like it.
And I have him as my Defensive Player of the Year.
Okay.
I thought Karl Anthony Towns actually stole his All-Star spot
this year.
Well, he didn't steal it, but you know the voters robbed him of it.
Yeah.
I think Rudy, man, is my Defensive Player of the Year.
But do the Wolves have enough to defeat Denver? Do you think they actually have a shot to take down the Nuggets?
To me, they're the Nuggets' toughest...
Number one threat.
Yeah.
Really?
In the West.
Over OKC.
Have you seen the Clippers play?
Over the Clippers, over
OKC's
the Suns.
OKC's too young, too thick.
Okay, yep.
And another thing is just OKC's biggest weakness is playing a team with functional size. Not size, functional size. Meaning, Rudy is going to be bigger than them
sure.
if they play the Wolves, but he's not going to actually hurt them.
Yes.
With his size. Whereas Denver...
That's pulling right in for us.
Oh, my goodness. That's crazy. This is crazy.
Whoa.
This is nuts. Oh, my God.
Can we park here?
Yeah, let's park up. I think Denver's a horrible matchup for OKC. Is this like a famous taco spot? What are they known for?
Quesadillas? You've never been here?
I haven't. Let's do it.
Surprise. I think what we all got posted on
Reddit. I mean, there's comedians in cars yeah, driving. Yes. There's
that one's me. Thank you. Thank you.
Salsa picante.
You want a red green or a
habanero, please.
So with the NBA right now in the East, the Celtics are going to win like 65, 66 games.
Yep.
Who has the best chance of taking them down in the East right now?
I still got to go with the Bucks. I think they are the second most talented team in the East, and I think they give the Celtics a nice run for their money.
A nice run for their money, or can they? Would you pick them in a series against the Celtics?
I'd have to see.
So you need to see like playoffs.
I think you know what? If the Bucks get to the conference finals, I think they have been played well enough throughout the course.
It means they were doing it right.
Yes. Yeah. In order to beat these guys. I think they can beat the Celtics in a series.
What about the Knicks? Is there any hope for the Knicks even though they don't have Randle? Any hope?
Against the Celtics?
Yeah, any hope?
No.
It's too bad the Knicks have had injuries and all that, but they feel like they're, you know, one big trade away. They got trade
yes.
assets. They got picks. They got some tradable contracts. I think the Knicks are going to be a team that can take a step up next year. So you're impressed by the car?
Yeah, super impressed.
Tesla did a good job for us.
Super impressed. I'm about to drive back home myself. I wish I wouldn't have to be standing in traffic and doing all this
nonsense.
Making
your next car was.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm
maybe,
not
maybe,
a salesman.
No.
I just want to see my friends happy.
Joining us now on Through the Ringer, we've had him on here before, but we got a big weekend in the UFC, so you know what that means. We got Chuck Mendenhall on the show. Chuck, good to see you, man.
What's up, Tate? You know, we only get these centennial events once every 8 years or so let's cherish it. Just like we did the eclipse, we want to cherish this thing, all right?
Yeah, don't look at it too long, but just cherish the moment that we're in right now. And I'll start with a simple question, because I got a lot of people in my life that keep saying this to me, Chuck. So I ask you, the expert, the question, the greatest fight card ever assembled, is that true here for UFC 300? Do we feel that way?
You know, we get that same thing every 8 years as well. People talk about this as being the great. No, I will say that... I think if you really look at this on paper and you kind of examine from the first fight all the way to the top, I think you could make that argument. I was talking to my boy Ariel Helwani. We do the podcast yep. with at The Ringer. He was talking about UFC 200 edging it just barely. And I think that might have been the case if John Jones had stayed on that card. You remember, like, he fell off the card fight week on the Thursday and was replaced with Anderson Silva to fight Daniel Cormier. It was shuffled. It was still a very deep card. UFC 200 had 11, I think 11 past and present champions, just like the card we're about to watch. But I think that this one, honestly, man, from top to bottom, is deeper. I think it is after, you get the feel after a while when you really look at it and you're like, you really put it together in the context. I think this one's better.
I like it. I like that answer. So yeah. Which fight are you looking forward to the most on the card? I mean, I know there's a lot of good options. So which one stands out to you?
It's a toughie, man. I mean, it's rare that you can actually look at a card and be like, you know, there's three or four right answers. I mean, you could say any of these fights, but I think, and I've been back and forth on this, I don't think you can go away from the Justin Gaethje Holloway fight for the BMF title, the symbolic title that they have. Justin Gaethje currently holds it. But it's really just, man, he's such a berserker. He's such a buzzsaw every time. He said this week, he's like, I never expect to be alive the next morning after he fights. You know, when, when a guy says, if I'm his opponent, I mean, that's got to get in your head. Like, the dude's willing to die in there every time he goes in there. And he's just such a frenetic, crazy fighter. The leg kicks, everything about him. But the bigger intrigue on this is obviously Max Holloway coming up, 155 pounds, usually fights at 145, to challenge him and to fight for this thing, which has massive implications for Max Holloway and probably Justin Gaethje. With Ilya Topuria, the featherweight champion, hanging out there, it could have mega potential for title fights, either class, for Max Holloway. So the fight itself will be wild, but the stakes are even crazier.
Yeah, which fighter on this card has kind of the most to prove this weekend? Is there someone that stands out in that sense as well?
Yeah, you know, I'd probably go with Jamal Hill on this one. He's in the main event. Now, he was the champion who had to vacate because he ruptured his Achilles back in July. And since then, obviously, there's been movement. And now we have Alex Pereira, who is fighting this week, and you're kind of getting a unifying bout. But I think for Jamal, for whatever reason, he hasn't got the respect, even though he's got some major finishes, and he's been looking very good. He just hasn't got the respect in this fight, for whatever reason. Like, people are kind of looking past him, and I think that this would be his big proving moment that he is that caliber of fighter, that if he's able to go in there and blow the wheels or blow the doors off of Alex Pereira, who nobody has really done. Izzy Adesanya was the only guy that we've seen beat him so far. I think that that would open everybody's eyes and say, all right, this is a legit champ, and the UFC could then get behind him in that way as well.
Yeah, so let's take a look at the main card. We're already kind of talking about it, but let's get into the nitty-gritty of this. The light heavyweight title, Alex Pereira, minus 140 here, taking on Jamal Hill, plus 110. This is Pereira's first defense of his light heavyweight belt. Hill coming off an Achilles tear that he had in July. So a lot of intrigue in this fight. Like I said, Hill plus 110 here. Who do you like? Do you think Hill has a chance to maybe get the upset?
I'm really surprised, to be honest, that the line is that close. If I'm handicapping this fight, it's probably Alex Pereira minus 200.
Wow.
I mean, to me, if you look at, first of all, if you look at Alex Pereira's pedigree and how his last year, it was only a year ago that he lost the title, the middleweight title. He has since resurrected, went up to weight class, beat Jan Blachowicz, who Izzy couldn't beat. Mm-hmm. And then followed up with against Jiří, who beat his mentor, Glover Teixeira. Now he's fighting Jamal Hill, who also beat his mentor, Glover Teixeira, and in a crazy like beatdown. There's a lot of subtext to this, but I think that Alex Pereira, as crazy it is just coming into like his peak moment of stardom, his peak moment of like where he has his best moment, because I don't think we've seen it yet. And it's set up perfectly for him. He's already had two major fights at Madison Square Garden. He's basically the king of Madison Square Garden. Now he fights headlines, UFC 300. I kind of see it as a showcase for him, man. I think it's going to be his fight. You also have to consider, I think we were pointing this out, like the ruptured Achilles that Jamal Hill is coming back from only 9 months ago. This is not... We remember Aaron Rodgers. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers like he wants to come back during the season. We're like, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. This is not that different, man. He's coming back fairly early. You know, 9 months and 15 months since the last time we saw him. There's not just a cage rest aspect, but there's also, is he doing this too early and all those things. You put all that together, and that's a tough ask, man, to beat Alex Pereira under those conditions. I'm favoring Alex in this one.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. And like you said, last time we saw Hill fight was January 2023 against Teixeira. So it has been quite some time since the last time we saw him. Next up, we got Justin Gaethje taking on Max Holloway. Minus 178 is Justin Holloway, plus 138. What do you expect to see in this one, Chuck? And how do you see this fight playing out?
Mayhem, blood, just bones flying out. It is one of those fights, though, man. And I think that Justin Gaethje, there is a part of him that cares about the title picture, and this obviously has title implications. If he wins this, he could very well be next for Islam Makhachev, the champion. He's in that position, but he also cares about putting on a show, man. I mean, and as the BMF title holder right now, obviously they want him to go out there and perform. They just want him to. This is a guy who has a dozen end of the night bonuses, meaning he's the most thrilling fighter. He has a couple of fight of the years since coming over to the UFC. He just is willing to die. No self-preservation. He's gotten a little bit better about it over time, but he just goes out there every time with that same wild energy. And if you're facing him, you know you're going to leave a part in that cage. You're going to leave a part of yourself. And Max Holloway, man, like, he's just, I think that he'll accommodate him And Max is very good at range, and I think you're going to see some crazy, crazy striking sequences in this where they're biting down and just swinging for the fences, and it's going to get wild, man. So I think that that's your fight of the night. That's an easy one, low-hanging fruit, but I do think it's going to deliver.
Yeah, I like when you say it's fight of the night, and we're going to see a full-on brawl there. So that'll be a fun one to watch. Next up, we got Charles Oliveira taking on Armand Sarukin. This is Oliveira is plus 176. Winner of the fight here. Will they get a shot at the lightweight title? I think that's the big question. And who do you have in this fight, Chuck?
Very well could happen. It very well could happen. Charles Oliveira, as crazy as he holds so many UFC records, including the most finishes and the most submissions, right? Like, he's a guy who is a certain Hall of Famer when his career is said and done, yet somehow we still sleep on this guy every time he's fighting in a big fight. And let's face it, Armand Sarukin is one of those guys that I think people have kind of dog-eared and said, watch out, this guy's going to eventually be a champion. And he's just coming into his own. He's 28, I think. So he's that guy. For Charles to win it, it's going to be a big deal. I think it's going to be fireworks, too. I think it's going to be an interesting fight. There's some dimension to it that I really think people should pay attention to. One, we just talked about Charles Oliveira with his submissions. We haven't seen Armin really put in positions where he's fending off submissions that much. It could happen. I think the prop is something like plus 450 on something that one guy is very battle-tested on and the other guy is not. I'd say that that's a very live prop to watch is Charles Oliveira getting a submission in this fight. Ultimately, I'm picking Sarukian, but I think if the path to victory could go something like that, where it's going to be a submission.
I saw there was something about Oliveira's bonus money. Can you explain this a little bit? Like he has bonus money that it's up for the taking. I don't really know how the bonus money works in UFC. Can you explain that to us?
The UFC will give out locker room bonuses, which they don't disclose. But the more public and celebrated aspect is these end of the night. They usually hand out four of them. But they, for these special occasions, for 200 and for 100 and now 300, they usually ratchet. They give a lot more. It's usually 50,000. My guess is it'll be more like hundreds of thousands of dollars they'll be giving out for these end of the night bonuses. And again, you have a lot of guys on this card who traditionally win it. Gaethje, Oliveira, there's a lot of guys who have a ton of money. Jim Miller, way down the card, has like $1 million worth of these types of bonuses. So it's going to be the part of the competition within the competition is who's going to get these bonuses. And there are some speculation, who knows if it's true, that they'll actually be like $300,000 bonuses to match the number. We'll see if that's the case. But
yeah. Oliveira, 14 years, he's had 19 performance bonuses. Yeah. Jim Miller's had 15. Gaethje's had 12. So
that's crazy.
Kind of like the game within the game there. These guys fight for these bonuses. Last one I want to hit before we take a break, Chuck. Women's strawweight title fight. We got Jang Hwa Lee taking on Yan Xiaonan. Right? Did I pronounce
Xiaonan,
that?
Yeah.
Xiaonan,
yeah, so it's right. Yeah.
Who do you like in this fight, Chuck? Obviously, heavy favorite there with Hwa Lee at minus 500.
It's too bad this fight is taking place at UFC 300 and not in China. This is the first time two Chinese-born fighters have fought each other. Women, like, especially in a situation for a title, it could have been big. It feels a little bit lost on this card, but it's an excellent fight, and I think that it is Hwa Lee's fight to lose. Mm-hmm. I think that she's just that much better. I didn't know, like, she had a couple of wars and a couple of losses to Rose Namajunas and a crazy war against Joanna and Jacek. I was almost wondering if she was compromised, but in her last few fights where she beat Joanna, she went right through Carla Esparza, and in her last one against Amanda Lamoche, where she, it was like 16 minutes of control time on the ground. She outstruck her like 6-1. It was such a dominant thing. I think that she is right now in her peak moment, like where she's just going to plow through the field a little bit. And I know the motivation is there to beat her fellow countrymen. So I'm leaning on the belt staying around Whaley's waist, and I think she does it emphatically in this fight.
Yeah, minus 500 says that's what Vegas expects as well. We're going to take a quick break, Chuck, and when we come back, we're going to do some prelim picks and talk some more UFC. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're still here with Chuck Mendenhall, and we're talking UFC. And Chuck, I'll just ask you a simple question. We talked about some of the big matches that we're going to see this weekend. Now we're going to talk prelim. So which prelim are you looking forward to the most this weekend at UFC 300?
Man. I mean, if you took this prelim, if you took all the prelims and just made a card, you would have a really good card. This is a ridiculous like set of prelims. You know, the Sadiq Yusuf Diego Lopez fight, I think, is going to be the barn burner. Like, I think it could sneakily be the fight we're talking about as fight of the night too. Like, it has that potential. That's going to be a really interesting one. But I honestly think it's got to be Kayla Harrison versus Holly Holm. This is one of those fights where Kayla Harrison, for the longest time, has been fighting in the PFL and winning their tournaments and winning $1 million. It's almost like taking candy, you know, from a baby, like the way she was winning it. She's just so ahead of the pack. She's a former Olympic judoka who has gold medals. She usually fights at 155. She's been fighting at 145. Now she has to fight at 135 pounds. Mm-hmm. So the drama this week is, how does her weight cut go? Does she make the weight? Does she get compromised in the process? Does she look different? And I think if you end, we're taping this, I think, on a Thursday. Like, we'll see in the next couple of days, but all indications are she's been managing her weight, and I think she's going to come in and be herself. And I think that that's a big deal. If that's the case, Holly Holm is a huge litmus test, former champion. She's fought everybody. She is 42 years old, so she's up there a little bit. There's some major intrigue because Kayla Harrison, if she comes in and she's able to do the work that she's done, you could have a new star in the women's ranks in the UFC, and they need it. At 135 pounds, it's kind of suffering right now with no Amanda Nunes, no more Ronda Rousey, some of the names we knew. They need that star brand, and I think this could be Kayla's moment.
Yeah, it could be kind of that pass the baton moment. I mean, you mentioned Rousey. I feel like, you know, Holly Holm, that her taking out Rousey was her moment where she kind of took over that guard a little bit. And if you look at the odds in this one, Holly Holm plus 320, Kayla Harrison minus 460. So the odds are very favorable to Kayla Harrison. So it is set up that way for her to take that baton. Do you think people will watch with that kind of in the back of their mind, especially with Holm, like you said, at 42 years old?
Yeah, I do. And there's some other little intrigues. One of them is this. Amanda Nunes walked away almost unceremoniously last year, I think it was. She just retired without a lot of fanfare, mm-hmm. and there's still some fights, but they weren't intriguing. I think if you get Kayla Harrison, you get her the victory, she gets a title shot, right? She wins a title. I could see it where Amanda Nunes might be like, all right, wait a minute, my business isn't done. I come back. There could be some big fights on the horizon. And if there's anybody who's going to draw her out of retirement, it would be Kayla Harrison, who they trained together with way back in the day and all this stuff. So there's some history there, too.
Yeah, I love the connective tissue. We love to see that. Yep. Another prelim I want to talk about, Jiří Procházka, minus 104, taking on Alexander Rakic, minus 122 here. Very interesting matchup, just based on the odds. What do you see here, Chuck, and what do you like?
That was masterful. You got both of those pronunciations perfect, these Eastern European guys. This should be an interesting one. Yuri's coming off his first defeat, and he had just been, you know, finishing everybody. Like, just looking, you know, he has that samurai look. I think he has a real samurai attitude, like a warrior. He wants to go in there and just put on these shows. Rakic is coming back. He was a guy who was a contender, but he's been out for 2 years, and so much has changed within those 2 years. I think the belt has changed town four times. Like, it's just, it's went around quite a bit. Can he come back? Can he have a good showing? I'm surprised with this line as well. I think Rakic is getting a lot of faith from this line. I think it's pretty close, right? Like, mm-hmm. what was the number there?
Yeah, it was Rakic minus 104, and Rakic is minus 122. Yeah.
I'm a little surprised it's that close. I think Jiří being as active as he is and also presenting the problems he does just with his power and everything else seems to me like he should be the prohibitive favorite in this. So that's a little bit surprising. But there is an element of surprise to this fight, which is Rakic. What does he look like? I just think after 2 years, he may not look exactly like himself from the last form we saw him.
Yeah, and if Jiří does win, does he get a shot back at his belt? I mean, obviously a former champ himself. Do we think that he is able to kind of bump back up into that conversation?
That's fully possible. There's another guy named Ankalaev out there who had a great performance against Johnny Walker. He could be. I don't feel like the UFC is super high on him because he's had some dud fights, but he certainly merits it. I think if Jamal Hill wins, right, and he's the title holder, and Jiří wins, I think you've got a good matchup because they haven't fought each other yet. So there is a real possibility there. Even if Alex Pereira wins, there's a possibility that Jiří slides back in there, they redo that fight.
Yeah, we love to see matchups that we haven't seen before, even though usually we get the sequels and all that sort of stuff going on.
Too many.
Yeah. Last one, Chuck, before I let you go. Any other prelims or early prelims where you see some potential value or something that's kind of catching your eye heading into this weekend?
You know what, man? Jim Miller is a guy who has fought on UFC 100, 200, 300. The only guy that has that distinction. He's 40 years old, which raises every red flag, right? Like, guys at 35 start to decline major, especially in the lightweight division. They just can't hang. For whatever reason, this guy's having a renaissance. He's won 5 out of 6. He's fighting Bobby Green, who I think he matches up very well against, another veteran. I think he's plus 142, Jim Miller. I love it.
Yeah,
that's great value for an underdog. I mean, he doesn't lose at these, man. He's won every Centennial fight. I think he goes in there, he gets that done. He's kind of the cult favorite heading in this fight. I really believe he's going to do it. And then there's a couple of others. Sadiq Youssef at plus money is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like plus 116. I think that's a very live underdog right there. I expect him to win this fight. This is going to be another good fight with Diego, but I think that he will probably get this done. So there's some really good value, and I mentioned earlier in the main card, like the Charles Oliveira prop, I do think that's a very live one at plus 450 to get the submission. Like,
yeah.
We just haven't seen Sarukian put in those positions, so if he all of a sudden there's a position where he doesn't know how to get out of or whatever it is, Charles excellent at putting guys in those positions. That could happen.
Yeah, and I like that number, plus 450. A lot of value there. Chuck, where can we find all your work? And then we'll let you go enjoy your Friday.
You got it. I co-host the Ringer MMA show with Ariel Helwani and Pete Carroll. We do that every Thursday usually, but during pay-per-views every Tuesday and then after the pay-per-views. And you can find my byline on all the writing at the Ringer as well.
You're the best, Chuck. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and I hope you enjoy this weekend. I know it's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome, man. Thanks, Tate. Appreciate it, man.
Yep. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Joining us now, she's been on the show plenty of times. She's given us great picks throughout the years, or I guess year at this point, but she's the great Katie Baker. Katie Bakes, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I'm always here for your hockey and tennis and miscellaneous needs.
I know. You keep us up to speed. We appreciate you doing that work for us. And I'll start with something that's near and dear to your heart. I'll start with the New York Rangers. We had the Stanley Cup in studio, and we were looking at the odds. Right now, the Rangers are near the top at plus 900. So I'll ask a simple question to you, Katie. Can they bring the cup back to Madison Square Garden? How do you feel about that?
Well, if they do, they've only won one cup in like 84 years. So it feels like it's about time. That's for sure. This has been a really good season for them, despite the fact that it often hasn't felt like that good of a season, which I think is a tribute to them. Their goalie, Igor Shesterkin, hasn't really had, as good of a season as he could have had. They had great backup play in net from Jonathan Quick. But despite that, he has 34 wins. They have just managed to kind of support him with goal scoring in a way that they didn't always do with Lundqvist back in the day. And so I do think they also have a good sense that, going into the season, a lot of people thought the New Jersey Devils were going to be their big rivals. And the Devils just really had a Murphy's Law season where everything went wrong. And I think the Rangers understand that they need to capitalize on that because the Devils are young and they're not going away. So, I'm hopeful for them. Usually I'm a little nervous, but I actually feel relatively good about them.
Yeah, Shesterkin, you mentioned, still got 34 wins this season, but it has been a bit of a roller coaster. Let's talk about Panarin, the bread man. 46 goals, 70 assists. He was in MVP conversations throughout the season. Has he played, and does he look in form enough to basically be the leader of this team to make them go for a run?
Yeah, the one stat you forgot to mention was he got one mention on Curb Your Enthusiasm from Larry David, which is like, that's an all-star stat right there. He in the past has had a little bit of trouble, just kind of having bad timing in the playoffs to have a little bit of a quiet period. I do think that this season he's really shown he can kind of rebound from that, not let it affect him. I would expect to see a good performance from him. I think a third of his points this year have come off the power play. So, you know, special teams are always so important in the playoffs. So, yeah, I'm hopeful. You know, he's another player for them. Mika Zibanejad, who went through a big slump and has come out of it. So, again, it's nice to see that they have kind of come through some of these periods that could have been rocky. And yeah, the bread man, let's hope he, you know, delivers.
Yeah, let's hope he delivers. FanDuel gave us some stats here, Katie, to get you a little bit excited about your Rangers. Most bet teams to win the Stanley Cup. The Rangers are in the lead at 11%, Hurricanes at 9%, you got Bruins at 8%, Oilers at 8%, Avalanche at 7%. So there is a lot of sharp money on the New York Rangers right now. So that is exciting times. Let's talk about my Hurricanes. And I say that the little tongue in cheek there with my Hurricanes, but they are the favorites based on the odds, plus 700. Obviously, they made some deadline moves. Do we think those deadline moves will pay off? And how do we feel about the Hurricanes once we get to the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the past, some people have been frustrated by their lack of trade deadline, you know, like the rental market. It just really hasn't been in their philosophy. But this year they did, they basically got the kind of most sought after, rental player, so to speak. And Jake Guentzel. And they also picked up Kuznetsov from the Capitals, who, you know, back in the day was kind of the number two to Ovechkin,
right,
and, you know, has kind of swooned since. But he's the kind of player that I can absolutely see him kind of popping off in the playoffs. As for Jake, he got injured shortly after that trade deadline acquisition. So it's a little bit of an unknown quantity, like how he'll, you know, be with the team. Like, he hasn't been seen that much, but he just, you know, he was someone that everyone was after. So the fact that they have him on a team that's already got, you know, Sebastian Aho and Brent Burns and, you know, Brady Shea, they're a team that I think is going to be, they always kind of fly under the radar, and I think this could be the year that they actually like go far in the playoffs and are seen by like a bigger audience.
Yeah, we love that. And the Hurricanes have won a Stanley Cup before, 2005, 2006, after the lockout year. So good news for the Hurricanes fans out there. Unfortunately, our producer Jack thinks I may have jinxed them by being next to the Stanley Cup and touching it, but fingers crossed that was not the case. Let's talk about another team that's plus 700, the Florida Panthers. They are tied with the Hurricanes as the favorites right now. Had a magical run last year as an 8 seed, ended up coming up short. Could this finally be the year that the Florida Panthers go home with the Stanley Cup?
Well, I loved their run last year. They're such a nice kind of brash young team, led, you know, with Matthew Tkachuk leading the charge, and being the 8 seed and being able to pull that off was huge. That said, it does seem like, and I guess this could change, although I'm not entirely sure, but it seems like they are on a collision course to potentially play the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round. That's a team that this is like now or never for them in a sense. I just could see them, if there's any team that's going to has a million chips on their shoulder, it's them. So it's going to be a tough first round matchup for the Panthers. That said, you know, they've got great goaltending. They now have that experience where they know what it's like to get to the final. They know what it takes, which I think is huge. I mean, I think, a lot of the teams that we've seen win in the past few years have had that, you know, almost but not quite before they actually win the cup. So they're positioned that way. But I would be, I don't know, the Leafs are just so desperate right now that if they can use that to their advantage in the playoffs instead of having it weigh them down, that could be just a tough matchup for Florida.
Yeah, it could be tough. Tkachuk has been great, and Bobrovsky, I feel like he's just been around and continues to be great, and one of the best names in hockey. So shout out to Sergei Bobrovsky. I know we'll have fun yelling his name out. Let's talk about the West. Let's talk about the Avalanche. Avalanche plus 800. It has been the Nate McKinnon show throughout the year. So I'll ask a simple question to you. Do we still think that the Avalanche are the best team in the West?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about McKinnon in the sense of Austin Matthews in Toronto, Connor McDavid in Edmonton, because I'm pretty sure it was like his ninth season in the league that they won the cup, and I think it was 22. Mm-hmm. And Connor McDavid's in his ninth year. Austin Matthews, I think, is in his eighth. And so you know, McKinnon now is on the other side of that. So now he's seen as just this legendary leader, and he is. He's got this incredible, serious, just he's always been a man beyond his years type guy. So, you know, now he has that weight off his shoulder, and now he can just, I think you're just seeing it. He's just playing. I mean, he's just seems like there's many nights where he seems like he's the best player in the league. You know what I mean? In a league that has a lot of great players. So, you know, he's had 50 goals this season. There's two guys on the team that are over 100 points. He's one of them. On defense behind him is a defenseman in Kale McCarr, who is 87 points, which is wild. So, you know, Jonathan Drouin, who's a player who had trouble in a lot of other teams, was kind of always, there was just always something not great going on with his play. He comes here this year and has his first 50 goal season in like 5 years and basically doubled his goals from last year. So it's definitely a team where, you know, they have like the Midas touch. And I think they, last year they got embarrassed in the first round, and I don't see that happening to them again, for sure. I feel bad for Winnipeg for it, you know, likely having to face them.
Yeah, it's a tough draw in the first round. McKinnon, minus 470 to win the Hart Trophy. He has finished second in the voting twice, 2018 and 2020. So it'll be a good year for the Avalanche fans to see him finally get coronated there. Let's get to the rest of it. We've talked about kind of the favorites. Let's get to the rest of the guys. Dallas Stars, they're at plus 800. They have six players scoring 25 or more goals this season. Wyatt Johnson leads the team. He's second in the NHL this season. Can the scoring keep up for Dallas? And what do we think about the Stars once we get to the postseason?
I think they can. I think it's funny. I heard a remark about them. I heard the sentence, Tyler Seguin is turning back the clock. And it made me feel very old because I still think of Tyler Seguin as a young Boston Bruin. But
right.
I mean, the Stars have been in the mix for many years now without really, you know, they got to the Cup final, I think, in that bubble year. But they remain a team that's just so balanced, which is huge in the playoffs when so much of it is about matchups and, you know, having a good third and fourth line. And so I think that's going to really help them that, you know, it's okay if they're, you know, as opposed to the Rangers, their top guys aren't scoring, you're in trouble. Dallas, there's so many people that can pick up the slack.
I like that. That's a good call. Let's talk about the Oilers, because I think this is fascinating. Obviously, everybody knows Connor McDavid. McDavid not 100% right now. Do the Oilers have a chance if McDavid does not get back to, you know, form, so to speak?
Yeah. So, McDavid just very recently was injured. He's got 99 assists on the season. So he's on the cusp of a 100-point assist season, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You know, more importantly, though, to him, I'm sure would say, too, will be the how he's doing for the playoffs. It's too, I don't like know how serious the injury is. It seems like it's day to day, but you just never know. It's kind of like a binary answer. Like if he's back and he's OK, he can always single handedly almost drag them. To, you know, we've seen it before. They did get to the Western Conference Finals right. A few years ago. That said, if he's not in, I wouldn't feel that great, especially because I could see them ending up playing the LA Kings, who I think are kind of a, you know, below the radar team that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to meet. So I am definitely like lower on Edmonton than I would have been a couple weeks ago. And it's just going to be more a little bit of a question mark.
Yeah, plus 850, the number is there. I mean, you talked about feeling old. I remember when I was at Grantland and they wrote the big Connor McDavid's going to change hockey kind of piece, and now we're at the point where he is the main guy in hockey, so there you go. Let's talk about the Boston Bruins. Shout out to Bill Simmons. Plus 1,200. Last year they lost in the first round. How do we feel about the Bruins this year? Do we think that they can turn things around and maybe make a run and make Bill Simmons happy?
I mean, I do think I'm of two minds in the sense of another team that I just don't see having like an early exit for the second year in a row. I think they're too disciplined and a veteran of a team similar to Colorado. That said, like if it looks like they might play Tampa Bay Lightning, which is another sort of team that I wouldn't want to be matched up with after having such a good season as the Bruins have had. Tampa's just kind of peaking at the right time. So another one where, I don't know. It's like I would be surprised for them to lose twice, but if they were going to do, if they were going to get beaten, I could see Tampa being the team. I do think though that they will, I think they'll get past the first round. That would be my guess.
Yeah, it's a tough draw, though, getting a dangerous Tampa Bay team there in the first round. So it could be back-to-back years. But the good news is that at the deep down, Bill Simmons knows he has to pull for the Hurricanes because they were the Hartford Whalers. So, you know, maybe maybe that's the move. He just gets in on that. Let's talk about the defending champs, the Vegas Knights, plus 1,100. Obviously, Mark Stone, the captain, has a lacerated kidney. He's been questionable. His availability will be a common question as we get into the playoffs. But do we think the defending champs can make some noise again there in Vegas?
Yeah, poor Mark Stone. Like, I think a couple years ago he had like multiple back surgeries. And,
yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah, so hopefully he can recover. But you know, I did like the addition that they made at the trade deadline of getting Tomas Hertl. I think they got Noah Hanifin on D, and those are. But I don't know. I don't feel particularly like they are going to get to the Cup final the way they did last season. I think they did a great job last season of taking advantage of, you know, a Colorado losing in the first round and getting their opportunity there. I think this year there's just a few teams in the West that I would see, especially on the heels of winning the Cup and all that means and short off season and everything and having to do that again. I just don't think they're quite at the shape that they need to be, but yeah, I mean, that would, you never know. The experience factor could always, you know, kick in. And, you know, Tomas Hertl is the kind of guy that can go off for four goals in a game. So you never know.
Yeah. Canada always wants to bring the Stanley Cup home. I do. We had the Stanley Cup here. You're looking back at, you know, all the championships from the original days. And, you know, they're giving out the title to, like, you know, Montreal, like the amateur league back in the 1800s. So Canada is always a conversation about getting the Stanley Cup. We'll start with Winnipeg, the Jets, plus 1,500. Obviously, this is a team that has great goalkeeping. How do we feel about the Jets? Is there a chance they could maybe make some noise just, you know, on the back of their keeper?
Yeah, I mean, if they weren't playing, probably playing, I think the Avalanche in the first round, I would see them as a good, you know, like under the radar team. Just, I liked what they did at the deadline. As you said, Connor Hellebuyck is, like, you know, has kind of for the past several seasons just been like consistently one of the top goalies in the league year after year. I think it's going to just be too hard to beat the Avs in the first round. That would be my biggest like fear for them. Despite the fact that they, you know, anyone else, and I would probably pick them to win the first round there.
Yeah, it's tough. Next, we'll look at Vancouver, the Canucks, plus 1,500. How dangerous can the Canucks be? Again, this is all matchup based, but do we think the Canucks, is there a path? I think is the simple question.
Yeah, I mean, Quinn Hughes on defense there has certainly had a much better season than his brothers in New Jersey, Jack and Luke, and is, you know, a front runner for the Norris for best defenseman. That's obviously the kind of thing that helps you in the postseason. To, you know, so much of the, you just start relying on the blue line so much. I think there's a path.
Katie, where can we find all your work? And then we'll stop peppering you with questions about the NHL.
On theringer.com.
Well, there you have it. Katie Baker, you're the best. Appreciate you joining the show as always. And we'll have you back in a few weeks and we'll talk tennis, golf, whatever you want to talk about. So there you go.
My man Yannick Sinner crushing it lately. Right. I'm thrilled. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you, Katie. Well, there you have it for another edition of Through the Ringer. I'm currently trying to find my Carolina Hurricanes here on the Stanley Cup. I got all day to do that. Thanks to our friends at the NHL for bringing the cup over. On Tuesday, we will be back with Kevin O'Connor and Cousin Sal, and maybe I'll ask Cousin Sal what he thinks about the NHL. Again, thanks for everybody for tuning in to Through the Ringer, and we'll see you on Tuesday.